Production. Recorded live.
Hello, everyone. This is Carl Schenneman, president and founder of ReviewLess, and welcome to another edition of ESI Bytes, where we offer information from national speakers on electronic discovery at a price everyone can afford, which is free, and available when you're interested in listening to it, which is whenever you hit download on your iPad or computer or any device and just decide to listen to it. Today we have an interesting show on the need to train more lawyers on how to use predictive coding tools, and something that we here are doing something about, and that's the topic of the show, these boot camps that we're offering around the country with EDJ Group on predictive coding. For those of you listening to the show, you know a lot of the shows recently seem to be hitting on using predictive coding. And I think, just like Ralph Losey realized recently when he split his blog post into half predictive coding and half everything else, that's where the biggest opportunity, realized cost savings in law resides right now, is to reduce the cost of culling data in discovery. And now we have plenty of technology in some cases dealing with these issues, but the missing piece is most lawyers have very little idea of how to use these tools, and more importantly, how to get comfortable with what they might perceive and oftentimes do perceive as a black box. So the point behind the boot camps we're offering is to try to address many of these concerns, to actually try and seed, more lawyers, if I'm going to use a predictive coding term, into the field to get comfortable with predictive coding lingo and at least give them a foundation on some of the biggest issues we're seeing in cases from survey data, from statistics, and in the practice. Our guests for today's shows is Judge Nora Berry Fisher from the Western District of Pennsylvania and one of the judges who's offered her time to help present at a number of the boot camps, and Barry Murphy, who's an analyst with the EDJ Group. I'm also a guest here because I'm one of the architects of the boot camp. So let's dive into the show here. And first of all, Judge Fisher, I'd like to ask your view on education in this space and how much it helps the judges to have lawyers who can work out these issues without having to involve the judiciary.
Well, thank you, Carl, for the question. And it's coincidental that we're actually doing this show this morning because, as at least Carl knows, yesterday we had a meeting of our special masters in e-discovery committee here in the Federal District Courthouse. And at that committee meeting, we looked at data that we had obtained from looking at Rule 26F reports leading up to the initial case management conference over a certain period of time. And one thing that struck all of us was that we've had an almost 25% increase in parties seeking electronic discovery. And to that end, we're seeing this in a wide variety of cases, small and large. We're certainly seeing it in our commercial cases, and because we're a designated patent court and we've had an uptick in those cases, we're seeing it there as well. But even though we're seeing more people seeking electronic discovery and indicating some level of familiarity with same, the judges on our special master committee, as well as the seasoned practitioners who are some of our special masters, like Carl himself is, have noted that there's still a dearth of knowledge in the legal community here. And we are about 8,000 lawyers here in Western Pennsylvania. And part of it is generational. Part of it is people haven't taken the time to learn. So with the boot camps, with some other programming that we've done in the past and some new programming we talked about yesterday, we feel it's very important to continue to teach the bar, both in-house and out-house, about these issues and about the tools that they can use to make their litigation more efficient, more cost-effective, and ultimately just, so that the parties are best served in the litigation process. So I think it's critical, and it's one of the missions of this court that we help to train outside attorneys who appear in court about advocacy, and this is ultimately something that is used in advocacy in presenting your case. So I think it's very important.
Great. So, Barry, let's talk a little bit about the survey data we've been compiling for the past 3 months or so. What types of things were we looking to identify?
Thanks, Carl. So we were looking to identify, first off, you know, sort of a baseline of how many people are using predictive coding and how they're using it so that we can help people identify where they might sit vis-a-vis their peers and help them to understand, you know, just how mainstream the usage of predictive coding is becoming. But we're also looking to understand why those who don't use predictive coding were staying away from it and what the major concerns were so that we could address through the boot camps, you know, what to do when there are specific concerns or if there are specific types of matters that come up. So, for example, the survey looks at, you know, why do people use predictive coding when they use it? So we can help to identify some of the reasons to use it and why they don't use it so that we can also identify, you know, when is predictive coding maybe not appropriate. But mostly it was to sort of get a baseline of what usage looks like and how people can benchmark themselves.
Okay, and I can't ask myself a question because that would be weird, but my background, in addition to having been a longtime advocate for using more technology to cull down data sets intelligently, is I was an expert in global aerospace, the only predictive coding case to work its way through discovery and win the fight to get a court order allowing us to use predictive coding. I'm also an expert in other cases, including working with a party in a very large case looking to receive data using predictive coding. So I've sort of gained a neutral perspective on how this can and should be done, having been a producer and a receiver. There are definitely differences in perspective from having done both, and we'll be talking about that at the boot camp, because I think both sides have legitimate concerns, they're different. But from those experiences, we're helping to weave in some concepts on how both sides can work cooperatively and transparently to become more comfortable with the process. But the only way to do that is to understand the process and understand predictive coding and how it differs across tools and also how to validate it across tools. So we'll be going into that quite a bit in the boot camp. Hey, Barry, we opted not to have traditional guests or sitting heads up front in the program, with the exception of the judicial panels. Would you care to discuss the role of the facilitators at each program?
Yeah. So what we've done is we've added you know, sort of a local flavor and an experienced flavor of folks who can add, you know, what we like to call real world perspective. Because, you know, there's materials that we're presenting. There's the survey data. There's things on, you know, how to, you know, sort of take the covers off of predictive coding and validate it. But then we want to have, you know, that someone who's been in the trenches, who is sitting in the audience with these folks, you know, adding their perspective. So many of these facilitators are actually working with predictive coding, you know, are coming at it from various perspectives and are just going to add a rich flavor to the discussion, as opposed to, you know, spending full sessions on, you know, just, you know, their one perspective. We'll have a number of those perspectives.
Yeah, and I'd like to add that having been on a lot of panels talking about this, that there are more people than you see at the panels, the same people over and over again, who are using these tools. And that was our goal, was to actually go in and find lawyers and lit support people you may or may not have heard of that have a case or two under their belt who can interject to some of the materials we've put together. And to add the Barry's answer, we knew we wanted to try to deliver more than some of the other outstanding programs that are being given on predictive coding nationally, and importantly, at a lower price. For example, next month I'm participating in panels where the fees range to attend from $750 to $2,000 on predictive coding, and I'm sure they're going to be outstanding events, and I encourage people to attend. However, these expert-driven events require out-of-town attendees generally to fly in to make them a success. That also drives up the cost beyond that $750 to $2,000 because you got your hotel fee, you got your airfare or whatever. And then when you're asking an expert to appear, they have to create material and do it with a panel. And frankly, most of the people that are experts on this are very busy. So the quality can be erratic because everyone is busy And, you know, oftentimes material, we all know, is pulled together at the last minute when you're busy. The war stories are great and useful. And frankly, I don't want to say anything bad about experts that are giving their time, because we need more of them. So it is useful. But what we were trying to do with our facilitators is give the same type of flavor, but we've put about 8 weeks of time into creating content, which we're hoping will create a different experience, which will go deeper than you can when you're trying to get together at the last minute. We've worked very hard on slides to guide lawyers through statistics and validation issues, which you really need to know to work through the predictive coding. And I want to give a little shout out to Tom Grix, who was the lead lawyer in Global Aerospace, who's a real whiz with PowerPoint, has spent a lot of time going over some of these slides to make the points that we're trying to make. So Judge Fisher, you're going to be presenting at a number of these events. How are you doing that? I mean, you're going to be in D.C., you're going to be in Philly, Pittsburgh.
Well, with my own busy docket, in fact, I have a jury out as I'm speaking. I will be participating, much like a podcast, via audio in Washington, D.C. with Judge Fasciola, with whom I've spoke before. He'll be live. And Judge Waxy, who I've gotten to know through judicial training and these programs, and he will likewise join me on the phone line. I'm also doing a similar program in Philadelphia with Judge Michael Bailson of the Eastern District. He'll be appearing live there, and I understand he has a recent decision relating to expense and cost sharing, and I think that will be interesting that he'll comment on it. And in that instance, Judge Waxy will also be calling in. And here in the Western District, here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, I'll be joined by my colleague, Joy Conti, who's the head of our ADR committee, very interested in e-discovery, and one of the movers behind our own special master program in the e-discovery arena. So I'm looking forward to participating, and whether it's live or by podcast or telephone, in each instance, I think it'll be a worthwhile experience.
Yeah, we've been trying to seed each event with a local judge, as well as leverage the expertise of a number of the judges that are well known in the space, who frankly, there's just not enough of experts to get people to travel to all these events. So we're trying to be efficient, and thus far we've been able to attract the local judge at each venue who's interested in e-discovery. So maybe we're seeding additional education in the judiciary at the same time. Who knows? We'll see how it plays out. Barry, I want the listeners to know where we have shows planned for and how they can find out more information about the shows.
Sure. We kick off April 17th in Washington, D.C., before taking the show to Chicago on April 24th, and then April 30th in Philadelphia before crossing Pennsylvania and taking it to Pittsburgh on May 6th. And then we wrap up the first set of programs on May 14th in my backyard in Boston. And if you go to the ediscoveryjournal.com homepage and click on programs, you'll be able to see all of the boot camps that we have and where they are and get information, including all of the agenda and directions on how to attend.
One of the other special aspects about this discussion is that you know, we've looked at, Barry and I, well over a dozen predictive coding tools. And instead of getting a sales pitch from someone who's trying to sell you something, and that's how a lot of a good education is gotten, we're just trying to present the facts. We know there are differences between different tools, and importantly, how that can get you into trouble if you don't know the differences. Different tools mean, when they talk about random, using random techniques, have different uses for that. Some are training and some are creating control sets. Judge Fisher, how would you like to get a case in front of you where the parties agree to a protocol and they have the language in there, but they had different meaning or understanding of what they were actually doing when they could have talked it out a little bit more in the beginning and tried to understand what tool they were using?
Yeah, no question. Attorneys need to do more at the meet and confer stage. And at least here in the Western District, we continue to see that folks don't do all that's required. And in this particular instance, Carl, if they're going to use technology, both sides, in my estimation, should understand what they're talking about. And even if that means bringing an IT representative from the client to the meet and confer, even if it means bringing the vendor representative to the meeting, that's what should happen so that, number one, they get agreement, and number two, when they come into court, they can help educate the court, and they can also lay out for the court how they're going to approach their e-discovery. Doing that at the beginning, front-loading, as we say here, you know, will make the case more efficient and ultimately much less costly.
And I'll add one little nugget in here. You know, this process of trying to put protocols together at the beginning, at a time when you don't know what the data is going to show, can create havoc down the road. One of the key aspects of predictive coding is actually how rich your predictive coding data set is. And if it's very rich, because you've done a good job collecting, you can do all sorts of easier ways to get, you know, comfortable with like training randomly, which might take longer if you don't have a rich data set. But at the beginning, when you're trying to set up your rules and your protocol, you wouldn't know this. And you know, it's one of the battles out there of trying to put good protocols together is understanding where a protocol can be like rails that lead you off in directions that maybe you didn't want to be going in because you just weren't ready to put those, you know, what steps in place at that time because you didn't have enough data. But anyway, that's just a nugget of the types of material we'll be talking about. So, you know, the ideal attendee might be someone with experience who wants to ask questions and share what they're seeing and experiencing, much like we do with our Friends of eDiscovery networking groups where you're trying to learn from your colleagues. Bear in mind, this is a local flavor event, so you're going to be surrounded by people that typically you're working with and seeing. You know, firms that want to build out their competence in this area beyond just one or two lawyers might want to send a younger lawyer or someone that's tech-oriented but hasn't had a chance to do a case in this area, or companies that might want to hear about neutral information on the space. So there's really something in here for both experienced and inexperienced attendees. Yeah, I also want to add there are going to be some differences between this program and others because we're going to ask attendees if they get there early enough to do a few minutes of document review work on some software we have, and we'll share those results during the break. We don't know how this is going to turn out, but we have a pretty good guess based on survey data. So we also are going to present some material and statistics, and I know the combination of doc review and math might be sort of a killjoy for many lawyers driving down attendance in the wrong direction, but I'm encouraging you, this is very important to understand predictive coding, and it's one way we're hoping to deliver more value than other programs. So Barry, one other question I was thinking of is if someone wants us to come to them and present this material in other cities, who should they contact? Because, you know, we've got it ready. We're ready to travel.
Definitely, definitely. You can contact either myself, Barry Murphy. It's just Barry, B-A-R-R-Y, at edjgroupinc.com, or Marilyn Gladden, who runs the program for us, at marilyn@edjgroupinc.com. Either one of us can get you all the information that you need.
Great. And you can also contact me at kas@reviewless.com. For listeners of ESI Bytes, I have been hearing from more of you since I know I've been real busy recently. I haven't done as many of these shows. I always like hearing from listeners, so feel free to send an email. That concludes today's really short show, trying to, you know, shed a little bit of light on education here. So I want to thank you, Judge Fisher, and also Barry Murphy, for joining us here at ESI Bytes. It's always a pleasure to have you share your knowledge with us and our listeners, and hopefully we'll be able to do some more shows with you later this year. I'd like to thank our sponsor, Jurnov, for their continued support of ESI Bytes. And to the listeners, if you've enjoyed this podcast, I'd encourage you to go to www.esibytes.com with a Y for a complete list of our show. You can also remember the show and website phonetically. It sounds out as Easy Bytes of ESI Information. However you choose to remember us, come to ESI Bytes to learn more about eDiscovery before ESI bites you back. This is Carl Shinneman, President and Founder of ReviewLess, wishing you a nice day.